Here we go. Here we go.
Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. And you heard that right. This is a podcast dedicated to discussing the classic Nicktoon, Hey Arnold, episode by episode. And we may, along the line, end up getting into some other Hey Arnold adjacent topics as well. But we're here and we'll keep coming back. And along the way, hopefully we can earn your admiration. A-D-M-I-R-A-T-I-O-N. Admiration. I'm Cody Narvison, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry. I was just reeling from your excellent spelling, Cody. Congratulations. You can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey. That is C-S-U-Y.
Very good. Yeah, I'm pleased I spelled that name correctly and then tripped over my last name, which is arguably the word I've said most in my lifetime. So shout outs to me for that. Also with us today is our local Birdman, Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. That's kids with a Z if you want to spell it correctly. We've got a couple of true all-timers on our plates today, starting with episode 14A. Which is called Spelling Bee. The original air date for this episode was November 20th, 1996. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Arnold competes in a Tri-City Spelling Bee to win money for a keyboard, but faces competition against Helga, who is being pushed by her father to win so she can follow in her sister's footsteps. And as always, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. Supervising the direction, we have Jamie Mitchell, and co-directing, we have Steve Saki. And welcome to the co-director's chair for the first time, Frank Neeson. May or may not have said that correctly. The sole writing credit for this episode goes to Joe and Solebert. Shout outs to him as well. Emily, I'll kick it over to you first. What were some of your big takeaways from Spelling Bee?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking, Cody. Narvison, I believe it was. I think Spelling
something
Bee.
Like that.
Yeah, something around that. Spelling Bee is a pretty cool episode, a pretty heartbreaking one as well, since we're seeing more of Helga's family dynamic, her dynamic with her father specifically. This is just a very cartoony episode in a lot of ways, I think. Yet we deal with some heartbreak in Helga's family. I think it's great to see, you know, the kids treat and families treating the spelling bee like a sport, like they're all in on it and they're cheering and they take it so seriously, which is really a funny aspect to this episode, I think, and a nice kind of cutesy dynamic. But yeah, Helga's dad is just a total jackass, lacks boundaries and support for Helga, and we see Arnold getting actual support from his family. And yeah, this is a rough one to contend with, but a good one to like see more into the way Helga is and how she was raised. And that she could use some more support, especially from her family.
Yeah, absolutely. Getting more of those breadcrumbs this episode was pretty huge. Harry, what do you think of this episode?
Yeah, I think this episode's remarkable. I can't believe what a perfect piece of television it is, just in the sense of like pacing and structure and characterization. It hits on a lot of what Arnold does so well. It might even be like an Ansel Elgort standard to do the sort of parallel storyline that Emily brought up. I can't remember, but it's something we've seen a couple of times now. I think it's as effective as ever here in establishing Arnold and Helga as sort of foils of one another. It ratchets up the tension towards a climax just perfectly and also characterizes both the characters and their mutual support networks and families really, really aptly and accurately with an eye toward the theme of the episode, but without contradicting any sort of established characterization. And even with time for throwaway jokes, which is wild when you consider that this is like a 12-minute episode that has that much to pack in. And it all culminates in a really brilliant climax wherein all of the characters are mutually consistent in their characterizations, and they all reach arcs that make perfect sense for their characters and that really beautifully illustrate a redemptive and heartwarming theme for children and everyone, right? And a surprisingly nuanced and complex theme about how being true to yourself is always the right thing to do, and that being true to yourself will not hurt people, even if you're afraid that it will, maybe. And even that people aren't defined by their circumstances and aren't defined by their traumas or their tragedies or their abuse, right? That they can overcome those things. All of that is all here, and it's all here in a completely self-contained 13-minute episode of TV that handles like six different characters simultaneously. It's just a masterclass, this episode, I think. And it's super fun to watch and talk about.
Yeah, I agree. While watching this, I get, I got the same sort of, I would describe it as like low-key hype. This is a low-key hype episode in both like its construction and those sort of throwaway things that you mentioned, Harry. Both of you said something that got me thinking about perhaps like a bigger takeaway from this episode for me. Emily, you kind of referring to like the competition of it all, and maybe how insular it is and how it's like very intimate to these characters that we already know so well. And Harry, you're kind of breaking down, like specifically referring to it as like a well-crafted piece of television. It got me thinking about the sort of, I don't know if it would be categorized as a trope, but it's kind of the, I see it referenced with a show like Saved by the Bell a lot, where it's like an episode where a competition or an event is happening. And it's really just like, you know, the six main characters are somehow the only people in the school. You know what I mean? Like they're the only people involved in the action. And it's like, this episode is, the more I think about it, feeding into it, but not in bad ways necessarily, right? Because like the, as we've said, the lessons in it are very good. By the end of it, we get this nice sort of like coincidentally symbolic justice against Big Bob. Yeah, but like it makes me think about how Hey Arnold is not necessarily feeding into this like this template of what a television episode could be, but it's almost like not skewering it either, but kind of winking at it and like feeding into it just to dunk on everybody. You know what I mean? Like in previous episodes, how Hey Arnold sort of embraces tropes, but then like puts a little twist or flourish on them, as if to say like, yeah, this is our hill and y'all are just trying to get up here with us.
Right. Every episode is like building the mythology of what Arnold is so that they can continue to return and capitalize on what they've already established. I think that this episode is an early but really powerful payoff, right? Because I think one of the big reasons why it works so well is because we already understand who Helga is, both of the sort of the dualism, the duality of Helga that we see, so that when we start to unpack why it's there, why Helga is the way she is, and why Arnold is the way he is, those are so impactful and so revealing in a way that they wouldn't be if we didn't already have such a great nuanced understanding of who both of these characters are, right? And like that gets into why this episode is so heartbreaking, as Emily pointed out, is that like now we can start to begin to, or like we can begin to understand why Helga is the way she is. And it's that she is under a lot of unfair pressure from her father and her family. She doesn't have an adequate support network because she's not appreciated for who she is. She's supposed to live up to her sister, who is sort of like this idealized, distant figure in the lives of her family. She feels she can't live up to that, and she feels underappreciated, and so she acts out, right? And she's this angry person because of this, basically this neglect that she's suffering. And there's such a parallel to that with Arnold, where Arnold has this amazing best friend in Gerald who shows up on a Saturday to root for him, has Grandpa who comes into his room with milk and cookies and says, like, we're going to appreciate you and be proud of you no matter what. And you're just as smart and just as good as all the kids up there no matter what happens. It's so pointed and so obvious that these relationships are a foil to one another. And it's so natural the way it builds it in there that it feels organic, even though it's very pointed, right? And it's so sad, as Emily said, which is why it's so heartwarming to get to that final place where even though Helga is the person she is, she still gets to self-determine and be a good person because of her love for Arnold and because of her respect for herself. Right. And it's so huge to see that and to make that statement to kids that, like, you don't have to be defined by your circumstances, or you don't have to be defined by what other people want from you. And what other people want from you can be wrong, and you can see it as wrong, and you can do the right thing anyway. Right. Like, it's amazing that this episode can establish that for kids and be anti-authoritarian in that way. And I think a big element of that comes from what you're talking about, Cody, which is that all of those pieces are already there, and we're going to utilize them in order to make this point. And that's something that Arnold is already doing in season one, and that we're going to see it doing over and over again, where it's like, these are the characters, these are the building blocks, we already have them, now we're going to capitalize on them to do this unbelievable thing for our audience, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm, I guess, side note, glad you got a chance to throw in anti-authoritarian, because this is an anti-authoritarian, that's so many syllables, anti-authoritarian podcast.
But yeah.
So I shout out to us for being that, I guess. We're trying our best. One other minor kind of piggybacking, Harry, off of what you were saying, I can't remember. This can't be the only, or like the last episode of the sort of grandpa being a foil to Big Bob, but that is so, it's such a natural thing for them to feed into this early, just because, like, Big Bob, he is kind of a big bomb when he erupts, isn't he? Big Bob at his, like, most extreme is directly opposite the very, like, earnest and gentle grandpa who, like, once again, it's the stuff he says, it's not necessarily the big takeaway from the episode, right? I mean, he says all these nice things to Arnold, and it does feed into that sort of, you know, foiling, like, that in itself plays into the I think the grandiosity of the episode. But, you know, Arnold's grandfather saying, you know, the only thing you can beat is your attitude, and that's, like, you know, a theme of a different episode, you know, the fact that that exists on its own, and it's a really good soundbite and a really good just kind of one-off takeaway from this episode, I guess just speaks to how stacked this episode is. It's one of my favorites, I think, after rewatching that certified it for me.
Yeah, it's nice to see that Grandpa can be so supportive and so funny still, like, so lighthearted with Arnold and being like I said, Arnold, we'll love you no matter what. So when Arnold is trying to get onomatopoeia, I believe. But yeah, man. Also, I'm just thinking about other lines in this one now, not to completely go off track, but does Helga tell Arnold that he's going to lose his butt?
That's right.
What she said?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it wasn't, or rather, I can't remember the exact wording, but I guess just placing this in 1996 even more, the 800 megabyte capacity for storage on the keyboard just shot my eyebrows straight out of my head.
And over 200 programmed instruments.
Yeah, oh boy. Yeah, I am
Cody,
I'm really trying.
Cody, didn't you buy a keyboard or something like that recently?
yes and no. Well, I bought nothing, but I did obtain a keyboard, a sort of late stage quarantine urge that has started to grow in me is, you know, screw it. Maybe I'll learn another instrument, and my family has a keyboard. And so that's up with me. Maybe that'll happen. I've been too afraid to take it out of the box because I don't know. That seems like a great deal of stimulation that the cat will not be able to handle. So we'll see what happens when I have an empty apartment again. But that's a little more information
sure.
You needed
blame,
to know about me.
Blame the cat, Cody. Sure, that makes sense. You're going to start playing it as soon as the cat's gone. I get it.
I guess I should I guess I should start on it because I can get into the Llewyn Davis phase, you know?
That's exactly right.
Halloween costume. Go ahead, Harry.
Such a good core acquisition. But yeah,
it's
Harry,
a great core acquisition.
Harry, what were you going to say?
Sure. I was just thinking about something Cody said about winning and losing and how that's another motif and through line in this episode is that Helga is upset because she says, like, even if I win, I lose. And if I lose, I lose, because she doesn't want to hurt Arnold, her beloved, and she doesn't want to give her dad the satisfaction of winning. Later on, Big Bob says, you know, if you lose, you win. If you try to win, you'll probably lose. In addition to everything else that this episode is, it's also an episode about competition and about how, Cody, as you said, the only way to really win or lose is to win or lose compared to, like, your personal goals or your personal self-reflection, right? And that's why at the end of this episode, both characters win, right? Because Arnold is able to win by denying the temptation that Big Bob tries to bribe him with. And Helga is able to win by standing up to her dad and reclaiming her own sort of agency over him. And so this episode, it reframes what it means to be victorious. And it says that you get to choose what winning looks like on your own terms. Right. And I think that in addition to everything else, right, in addition to the anti-authoritarian sentiments and the self-determination sentiment of this episode, it's also saying that, like, whatever competition means to you, it's about you and it's about what you can do and about what you want and not necessarily about what other people want from you or what they say you have to do to win, right? Like, you get to define what that looks like. And again, like, what a brilliant message for kids who are starting to come to an age where they are trying to self-determine, right? Trying to figure out who they are and what's important to them, to say, like, you know, you are Helga or Arnold in this situation. You get to choose what's important to you and why. And you get to choose what that means, right? And the right support system will support you no matter what. And the wrong one is one that you can ignore. And it's not an existential threat to who you are, right? Like, Helga gets to be Helga, even though that means letting down her dad, because her dad doesn't have her best interests at heart. And I think that's such an important thing to say, especially to, like, not to get too real, but, like, there are kids with Big Bobs for dads, right? Like, there are kids whose parents do not have their best interests at heart and who do not care about them. And it's so cool to see a show that's like, they can go to hell, right? Like Helga is, it's good that Helga is doing Helga despite what it means for her dad. And, like, that's because her dad is bad and, like, that's wrong and he shouldn't be that way. And it's awesome to see that.
Yeah, I feel like this episode does such a good job of not only showing you how important support is for young kids, but, like, just needing clear boundaries, especially as you're becoming your own person and have your own interests and everything. And her dad just totally lacks boundaries, has, you know, conditional love for her, and is just such an asshole. I hate him so much. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about what you mean by boundaries? Because I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, I think so. He, like, we see Arnold's family and Gerald out in the stands supporting him on during the spelling bee and cheering for him, like, you know, in a healthy, normal way to support him from afar. But we see Big Bob back behind the scenes. He's, like, behind the curtain at the spelling bee and, like, pulls Arnold aside off stage just to, like, bribe him and try to get him to lose to Helga. So, yeah, that his beeper's business can thrive, for God's sakes. But yeah, that's, like, a clear lack of boundaries on his part, right, for between him and Helga. And it sucks to see that. So that's, like, why it's extra cool when she defies him and stands up for herself.
Right. And, like, I think he's making it about him, right? And about his legacy. He literally makes the spelling bee about his beepers, and he makes it about Olga's legacy and the Pataki's legacy as winners. And he says that, like, in order for you to be a Pataki, in order for you to love yourself, basically you have to win, win, win. Which is what the parallel is, where in the meantime, like you had said, Gerald and Grandpa and everybody, they say, like, listen, Arnold, we'll love you no matter what. And like, whatever happens here, you are still, we're still proud of you, and you still did a great job. And that's such an important message, just like you had said, to show kids what good support looks like, and to show kids how they should value themselves and how people who love them value them, right? And to make Big Bob the villain here, and all of his traditional patriarchy and all of his traditional greed is so brave, I think, and so important.
Yes, brilliant. Overstep any boundaries myself, but are there any final shout outs, call outs that we want to distribute before calling it?
I was just thinking about how ESPN, you know how they had like 1,000 ESPN channels? And back in like high school or middle school or whatever, there would be a spelling bee, the National Spelling Bee or whatever, on one of those ESPN 420s or whatever it was. So just shout out to ESPN, I guess.
That's wild. I didn't know that they showed spelling bees on TV.
Yeah, they still do it.
I swear I'm not making that up. I definitely watched it with my dad at one point.
That is amazing. Cody, you have a little bit of history with spelling bees, right?
Yeah, Cody, what about that?
A teeny tiny history. I was in a spelling bee with my seventh grade, like the whole grade level, at the middle school I was in a place that I'm not going to tell you, so you can't find me. But I made it to the final two. And it was me and the person who eventually won. We were just kind of going back and forth, in that we got a bunch wrong in a row. And I can't remember all of them that I and or we got wrong. And I can't remember like the final one or anything like that. The one that I do remember missing was melancholy. And that's symbolic.
Yeah, you want to spell that for us real quick?
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's spelled like, oh, wow. Sorry, I think it's safe to say that, that episode really cast a spell on me and us. So as we conclude our discussion of this episode, I'd just like to pause and say thank you, as always, for tuning in. Don't touch that dial, because we'll be right back shortly, to dig into one of the most, another one of the most, rather, iconic Hey Arnold storylines of all time. So don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. Now comes the time for us to talk about episode 14B, which is, of course, Pigeon Man. The original air date for this episode was November 20th, 1996. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. After his pigeon gets sick, Arnold confronts a man that has known and trusted pigeons all his life. Sorry, I was looking at it this summary, which is weirdly long. The man has not been around other humans for many years, as he feels he cannot trust them. When Arnold takes him for a day in the city, Harold and his friends come along. They come along and accidentally destroy Pigeon Man's bird cages while trying to make simple mischief. Simple Mischief is a name for one of my bands. The fine folks who made this episode possible, we've got Jamie Mitchell not supervising the direction this time. I see him listed as a co-director. So for whatever that's worth, congratulations. And Larry Leaklater was the other co-director for this episode. The sole writing credit for this episode, y'all, welcome to the program, Joseph Purdy. Joseph, can I call you Joe? Woo-hoo. I'm going to call him Joseph. Joseph Purdy. Welcome to the pod, and welcome to the episode, Harry. I'll go to you first with your takes on Pigeon Man.
Yeah, thanks. So this is one of the most famous episodes of Hey Arnold. It's often cited as one of the best episodes of Hey Arnold. I think that's probably right. It's certainly like one of Joseph Purdy, who is one of the best writers on the show, one of his most acclaimed episodes. It's a really phenomenal episode, right? Like, you can totally see why it is the way it is. Pigeon Man, as played by the great, late great character actor Vincent Schiavelli, I believe is how you pronounce his name, who was a man with Marfan syndrome, which is sort of a physical, not disability, but it gives you a distinct appearance where you have elongated limbs, and he is known for his characteristically sad face, where he has long drooping eyelids and a somewhat sunken eyes that give him a distinct appearance, which is emulated by the appearance of Vincent, the pigeon man, in this episode. And it uses that to make this really powerful, very moving statement about people who are different, right, and who are ostracized by society as a result of that difference. It demonstrates, it goes to great and heartbreaking lengths to demonstrate the ways in which they are marginalized by society for being different, the ways in which they're bullied and picked on because people don't understand them or feel threatened by them. And it makes this really beautiful final statement about how those people are not worse than us. They're not, just because they're different doesn't mean that they're invalid. It means that they have lives of their own. And even if you can't fully understand their interior worlds, those interior worlds are beautiful and realized and full, and they can be the people they want to be. Not to go on too long, but there's a famous sort of commentary on this. It was a rumor started on the internet years after this episode aired about how in the final moments, Pigeon Man gives this very stirring speech to Arnold and then opens up his coat and a bunch of pigeons grab onto strings that are attached to him and carry him away off into the sky. And it's a really beautiful moment. It's sort of a magical realist moment, right? A lot of people took that as metaphorical and said that in fact what was happening was Pigeon Man was committing suicide because he couldn't live in the world of people anymore. That was allegedly the original ending that was deemed too dark for Hey Arnold, and so they had to rewrite this ending, which is why this ending kind of comes out of nowhere and is magical realist, et cetera, et cetera. It's worth noting that unequivocally that is not true. Craig Bartlett has come out and said that he hates that interpretation of this episode. The Pigeon Man character was in the Jungle Movie just to sort of demonstrate that he was still alive and still doing what he said he was going to do at the end of this episode, which is like travel the world and help pigeons in need as the sort of symbolic downtrodden, overlooked, marginalized animals that they are, because he feels a kinship to them because of how he's been mistreated. And it's like important that is wrong, right? And it kind of gets at the heart of the episode, so we can talk about that a little bit. But I kind of wanted to get that out of the way early and say that, like, that is not true. That is a false internet rumor. And it's, like, important to the theme of the episode that that's not true, right? Because, like, the whole idea is that Pigeon Man is not wrong for being distant. We are wrong for distancing him because we are losing out on who he is, which is this beautiful person. But he is still the beautiful person that he is with the real relationships to birds and to himself that exist, right? So, like, it doesn't make any sense that he would kill himself because, like, he is an amazing and, like, realized person, regardless of what the world has done to him. And the problem is us, not him, right? And so, like, it's important to say that, I guess. But I've gone on long enough. Cody, what did you think?
No, for sure. I'm glad we got a chance to characterize the episode that way and give that context, because this is sort of like a mythically built up episode for like appropriate reasons and not necessarily appropriate reasons. But I will kick it over to Emily. Emily, what'd you think about this episode?
Yeah, that was all really interesting framing, Harry. I did not know about that whole background with this one. This episode ends in quite an emotional way, especially even just like the ending song in the credits. My goodness.
Yeah.
It's so touching and, yeah, frustrating one to see Arnold's friends just destroying Pigeon Man's whole space, his sacred safe space that he had up on the roof. I don't know what else to say. This is a really unique episode. Yeah, for sure.
It almost feels like a very special episode, right? Like capital V, capital S. Like you said, right down to the fact that they don't use the usual closing music. They use like the theme of Pigeon Man, which is this very like sort of wistful, melancholy theme, incorporating some like woodwind flute instruments that evoke sort of like flight or mysticism and like a connection to nature. And it's a really special episode, right?
Yeah,
definitely.
No, for sure. Very, very super special, maybe the most special. And I guess like to go along with my thing, which is watch for things that help kind of inform my reading of the show, and also like the types of episodes that we get. Harry illustrated the literal sort of, you know, mythos and legendary, that's not a word, around this episode. And I guess like the fact that this episode literally is that sort of urban legend episode that we often talk about. I think my reading of those has changed, or I don't even know if it's changed, but it's deepened a little. Just thinking about Arnold in this situation, within moments of realizing his pigeon is not doing so well, he just comes to the decision that I'm all out of options. This is literally the only thing I can do right now is to go to probably, like, realistically, the most extreme lengths, visit this person who may or may not exist, who's had, like, who has so much built up around him. I mean, we heard what Gerald had to say about him. And just, you know, I think in previous episodes, we talked about sort of the other end of it with kids not necessarily, or I guess looking at something as in that sort of reverence and having that inform how the episodes go. But this operates sort of in a different way. It's Arnold saying very matter-of-factly that, like, I need to see this person and do this thing. This very, by the way, extreme person who ends up taking an exodus from society and humanity at large. Harriet calls to mind a movie you and I recently watched, Green Snake. Shout out to the maybe one or two people listening to this who will understand that.
Hey, Green Snake rules. You should watch that movie. It's extremely good.
Y'all should watch Green Snake. Sorry, go ahead, Harry.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. You characterized Arnold really well. This episode reminds me a lot of the Hey Arnold Christmas episode, which we haven't actually talked about yet because we're saving it for Christmas. But that episode, like this episode, it illustrates this kind of oft overlooked aspect of Arnold, which is that he is not a particularly reasonable person, right? He is a dreamer and he is an idealist almost to a fault, right? Where, like, in the Hey Arnold Christmas episode, he decides that the thing he wants to do for Mr. Nguyen is find his long lost daughter, who is separated from him at Ho Chi Minh at the fall, or in Saigon at the fall of Saigon, right? And it's like, Arnold, that's a ridiculous thing to want. Like, It's irresponsible to put that on yourself, because how could you do that? And then the rest of the episode is about the incredible lengths that the people who love Arnold are driven to go to help him achieve this goal. And that sort of becomes the real reason for the season, is like, you love these people so much and this thing should be true, and so you're trying to make it true. That's sort of similar to what happens here, where, like, Arnold decides that the Pigeon Man is going to help me because it's the right thing to do. And his friends have a point, right? Where they keep saying, and, like, they are also symbolically people who are not understanding in this episode. So it's wrong that they say that Pigeon Man is a psychopath and he's, like, he's the last person you should talk to. But they have a point, right? That, like, Arnold, you shouldn't just go to this guy who departed from society and ask him to fix your bird for you, because what if he hurts you, right? Like, what if he is the sort of scary urban legend that we built him up to be? Which, by the way, this is also an urban legend episode in addition to everything else it's doing, and it's one of the great urban legend episodes in that it shows how the world is both more and less magical than you make it out to be, right? So it's another great episode for operating on those terms. But it's really interesting that this episode, like a lot of episodes of Hey Arnold, is ultimately about the sort of triumph of a childhood idealism. But like the Christmas episode, it's a triumph of childhood idealism with a caveat, right? Which is that it's not the idealism you think it is. It's more about what you do, right? It's about how you have a not a duty necessarily, but you have an ability through your own will and your own expression of self to affect the world such that the things that are right can be right again. But that's not inherent, right? Like, Arnold had to be kind to Vincent to bring him back into the world. That was something that he did with his internal idealism and kindness. It wasn't something that was natural, right? And in fact, there was plenty working against him, as we found out heartbreakingly.
Right, very heartbreakingly indeed. My only other big thought that I wanted to get out there, and we've talked about some of the ways in which this episode has been built up over the years, and you know, put on this sort of god tier of work of television, again, justifiably. Taking a few moments, as always, to talk about Jim Lang. The music in this episode really fascinated me, because a lot of his really affecting work, and I guess disclaimer, I don't really know how to talk about music super well. If you really want to listen to someone talk about music well, you should listen to the podcast Jason produces and co-hosts called Crossfade. It's a movie, not a movie podcast. He's got one of those too, but it's a music podcast. You should listen to it. I'm going to try my hand at it now. But Jim Lang has, you know, we've talked about his really affecting music in previous episodes, and it just kind of cuts straight to like this sort of somber mood, I'll throw out melancholy. It goes there right away. There's this sort of twist on the music that we hear when Arnold is on Pigeon Man's rooftop, where it's this soft jazz kind of cut in with this, I want to say easy listening or even like elevator music. It's very like, it's so different from what you would expect. It's not bad by any means, but that sort of like glimmer of, you know, something else, you know, a glimmer of something other than just this deep sadness. It's almost too gentle, and it goes so well with the propping up of this guy, this character who's lived for so long. It looks like, you know, I mean, he is a man of the birds, but it looks like, you know, a gentle breeze would knock him straight over to the ground. It fit that super well, and it really, like, I don't know, it took this episode to like a completely different place for me.
Yeah, it's tender, right? Like that, I think that's probably the right adjective for it, which is so appropriate because the Pigeon Man himself, Vincent, in stark subversive contrast to his legend, the way that the legends are always subverted in this episode, it turns out that the reason the Pigeon Man departed from society is because he was too sensitive for it, right? He's a beautiful soul who relates better to pigeons because they are as gentle and as sort of sensitive as he is, and he can't tolerate the way that people are to one another and the way they had been to him. And so this is an episode, among all of the other things, that's about people who are different from others because of differences of character, or even of like of their own sort of mental sensitivity, right? Like I think that Pigeon Man is a really poignant metaphor for a lot of different things, right? Like we've talked about how Marfan syndrome is there, but he could also be a character with a lot of different sort of abilities or disabilities, not disabilities or differences that would isolate him, right? And this is a sort of like catch-all for all of those things. It's sort of symbolic that like Pigeon Man is just a person like people, you know, who for one reason or another is different from other people. And we see how people treat him differently because of those differences and how he is made to suffer for those differences. But we also see that he's not defined by those differences, and that if people like Arnold could see him for who he is, they would benefit from that, right? Like they would be able to really learn something from these people, and the world would be a better place, right? Like he says that, I hope there are Arnolds wherever I go next. And that's like the very powerful message here, is that like we have to accept people who are different from us, and we have to understand that they have things to teach us, maybe because of those differences, and that if we listen to them, we could really benefit from that, right?
Yeah, I was thinking just going off of what you just said about how emotional it is because of the amount of trust that Vincent can put into Arnold, or like gains back in people through Arnold, and how beautiful that is. He trusts in the pigeons and himself and people like Arnold. So it's nice that we see him again in the Jungle Movie then, to remember he's still out there doing his thing.
Yeah, that's very important to me too, right? Because it's like at the end of the day, Pigeon Man is Pigeon Man. Like he is the person he wanted to be. Which when you consider how this show is so much about self-determinism and about how you can be the person you want to be, and furthermore, you can make the world the way you want it to be. Oh, through your affectation, through your kindness, through your the energy that you put out into the world. And so it's very important that we get that coda, right? That it's like, that's true of Pigeon Man as it's true of Helga and Arnold and the other characters here.
You definitely want that coda. Right now you've just got a code D, sorry. But before we wrap this up, any final shout outs from either of you?
Oh yeah. My notes are kind of all over the place for this one. And so we've touched a lot on Vincent, and obviously he's the main event here, in episode Pigeon Man. But I wanted to mention just at the very beginning of this, how sweet it is that we see Arnold with carrier pigeons at all. Like, just, we haven't seen him with carrier pigeons before, unless I'm completely forgetting a scene or something. And Chester, Lester, and Fester are his buddies. That's just awesome. I did not know this about Arnold until the beginning of this one. And then also we see Sid opening up for Gerald out on the stoop. Love to see that. Gerald turns to Sid and says, "Lead me in, babe," or something like, yep, something to that effect. And then at the end, because Gerald does such an incredible job telling the urban legend, Sid goes, "That's my boy," to
it's
Gerald.
So cute.
It's so cute. Such a proud friendship moment.
Yeah. Similarly, Vincent Schiavelli is incredible in this episode. Like, it's his performance is so important, right? Because we have to establish Vincent as this unbelievably tender, beautiful soul. And like, Schiavelli has such like character to his voice, and he imbues his every line, and he doesn't have that many, with like so much sadness and wistfulness and tenderness that like, it makes you want to cry. Like, I get a little bit teary eyed just thinking about how weighty his performance is here.
Like, how he says Arnold.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's got that great like New York accent, and he says like, "People, Arnold," and it's like the way he says that is just crushing. Yeah, he crushes it. Lots of great voice acting in this episode. Helga is only in one scene, but she absolutely kills it as always. I have no idea how that person is that good at voice acting. At one point during the telling of his story, a line that always sticks out to me is Gerald says that there was a figure out there amongst the avian multitudes. And it's so funny to me that like Joseph Purdy wrote avian multitudes into this show for kids, and like had Gerald say that as like a way to like give him this badass like weighty story. And it just rules. Like, I just love that sharpness of writing. Yeah, this is just a great, remarkable episode. The final scene is full of this orange sunset that looks really beautiful. So it's also, yeah, a really like beautifully animated episode. And during the during the retelling of the urban legend, there are all of these like brick reds and like dark colors and like this sort of jagged imagery that also looks really good and does a really good job of establishing how large these legends loom in the imaginations of these kids. It does a lot of really great things with sound, with the pigeons, and with music. I don't know. It's just like, this is a really special episode amongst special episodes, right? And it's easy to see why it has the legacy that it does.
Very well said. We all contain avian multitudes. I do believe that does about do it for us today. Before we go ahead and leave the nest, I'd just like to say again, thank you so much, as always, for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. That's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
And I'd like to say, always wash your berries before you eat them and fly towards the sun. I've been Harry, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
Aw, and I'm Emily. Thank you all for listening. You can follow me on Instagram if you want, at Emily Sui.
And Harry hijacked my outro, so I'm going to pick a new one on the fly. We wanted to give a shout out to our sponsor for this episode, Big Bob's Beepers. Big Bob's Beepers, he's the king. Big Bob's Beepers. Ding, ding, ding.